UCLA, and there was a dinner. The students had had a dinner at some restaurant or something. And they hired Roger, I think that's what it was. And got there, and one of the Indian students, you know, the students were running everything, and in their own disorganized fashion. And so the student told this funny story, and I'll never forget. Somebody booked them into a motel, and I think it was a Holiday Inn, and they didn't know which one. So they had to find these guys. So they said, one of the students called up and said to the woman at the desk, "Do you have a buffalo head registered?" And long silence. "No." "By any chance, do you have a pipe stem registered?" And he just, and she just hung up on me, slammed the phone. I'll never forget that. I just laughed because, you know, those names were not ones that,
yeah,
that one would, and he said, "I guess she just thought I was making fun of her." And he said, "I couldn't find either Mr. Bucklehead or Mr. Pipestick or whatever." But Roger was hired at that point. And, I ran into him at a meeting one time a few years ago. But, he, I think, was the first head of the Indian Studies program.
And when was that formally established?
Oh, gosh. Oh. 70, 71, and through there, I can't remember. I'm trying to think of, it was before I went to San Diego State to teach. I went to San Diego State to teach in 1972. And it was before that.
How many other women were on this community hiring board?
I think about four of us. I can't remember. I remember Wanda Bicknew. And there were a few others that I don't really remember. And then, teaching on the program, after that, then there were a lot of Indian women who had come on. Pat Locke was there.
Don't do that now. You know better than that.
I see Pat Locke came in. I'm trying to remember who else. But a number of them, there were a lot of women involved in the work that was going on at that time.
What was your feeling about your presence as women?
I don't think we thought anything about it, frankly. I don't think, and I remember about that period of time, say in the 70s sometime, the question did come up at the Indian Women's Club. I think somebody had come to talk about feminism and this kind of thing. And one of the women, you know, who was uneducated and had said afterwards, "You know, that's not really a thing for Indian women to discuss because we always had to do these things. This is nothing new for us to assume this role in the community, to assume this role in our family." I guess to what she had finally ended up saying, "I guess we've always been feminists because we've had to be."
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think that pretty well, because the Indian Women's Club was a very strong, forceful group around here for quite some time. And I don't think we thought of it really in terms of feminism. We just looked at it in terms of things that had to be done. Mm-hmm. And Indian women usually got things done.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Did most of these women in this group educated formally?
No, they were not. A few were, but most were not.
That's interesting because the prevailing attitude that I seem to read in that time period with women, especially women from reservations, is that they were subject to very, for lack of a better word, sexist relationships with their men. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't see that with these women, I'll tell you.
That wasn't your experience.
There was never a question, if we're going to do this, well, I've got to go home and check with so-and-so whether I can do this or not. Well, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah, we'll do it.
It was
they made their own decisions.
That really contradicts a lot of what I read. That's, yeah. That's an interesting, I like that.
Yeah.
There was never any question about that.
You know, having to check with so-and-so, seeing if it's okay if I go. And then some of the urban women started getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a good, strong, forceful group. I really enjoyed my years with it.
Mm-hmm. What was your, obviously your oldest son was off at college at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your children were primarily raised.
Well, I had still two younger ones. I had four children.
Oh, that's right. I have a large.
Yeah. So there was a large age gap. So the two younger ones were still at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was your husband's reaction to all this?
Oh, he was involved in it. He helped out.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other intermarriages. Mm-hmm. Other women in the area were married to non-Indians. They were all involved.
Yeah, when you were at UCLA, for instance, helping, did you drive home every day?
Well, we just got for meetings.
For the day?
Yeah, just for the day. And they always had meetings on Saturday. So we drive. I drive up Saturday morning and drive back Saturday afternoon.
So what was your outside of? Well, I guess my question is, what was your? Did you have a paid job at this point, or was?
No, at that point I was in graduate. Well, I had a paid job at graduate school because I was a graduate assistant.
Right.
Yeah. But those are pretty loose. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did you? What was your home life like? I mean, were you still primarily responsible for the kids, or did you have your...
Yeah, oh yeah, I was responsible for the kids, yeah. Uh-huh.
Would your husband ever get, say, upset if you were going to be doing something and you didn't have dinner ready? Would that be an issue?
No. Better not be.
So you didn't... I guess my question is, did you find it hard to balance everything you were doing plus your role as wife and mother?
No, I think because I'd always seen my mother doing that in the house. Mm-hmm. My mother worked, my mother was involved in the Indian Women's Club, my mother helped my father, he was in the care board in the Farmers Association, and they were always very community oriented. And I didn't really see where there was a problem with doing these things that needed to be done.
Were the women you were surrounded with did, especially in academia, working and motherhood? And activism, was that sort of part of the course?
Oh, I don't think any of them were activists at all. I think that they did their job and they did their mothering at the, you know. A couple of my friends were activists, and one was Panamanian, and she was very involved in the Hispanic groups.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, by and large, she wasn't married, so I think by and large, there was not a lot of activism that I saw. Of course, you know, most of my friends were Indians, and
mm-hmm.
so that's the group I hung around with. And I just happened to be going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And that to them was a plus, because that's, well, you're educated, you go do it, you know.
What was the reaction of your colleagues at the university?
Well, this one friend of mine was, as I said, Panamanian, and she and I were probably closest. And she was active in, you know, in San Jose went around and stuff. We both did the same kind of things.
So you never felt pressure for, I guess, stepping outside of a, quote, traditional role? I guess your definition of traditional role would be very different.
Yeah, I've never ever seen myself as a traditional housewife, this kind of thing. It's not what I've ever.
But I guess I'm asking if people around you, neighbors, friends of
I don't know, frankly. I've never been too involved with neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I got involved once in my life with neighborhood and thought I would never do it again. My stance was that they were always in and out of my house wanting to drink coffee, and that's not how I see myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm still the same way, because if I get on a board and I find I'm only just going to board meeting and nothing's getting done, I resign. Somehow or other, you know, I'm not a big coffee clatcher or this kind of stuff, and so
just keep it moving.
Yeah, yeah. And sit around and discuss soaps or any of this other stuff, which I don't watch. It just wasn't me.
Mm-hmm.
And I volunteered at my kids' nursery school, I did things like that. And I volunteered down at the Friends Meeting House in La Jolla. We were at FUCSD. The Friends Meeting House in La Jolla started at that time a tutoring program, so I'd go there and I'd tutor. Mm-hmm. I always took my kids with me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
yeah.
So daycare wasn't an issue?
No. And I did have a woman who took care of the kids in the house. Somebody one time asked my husband, I'm in my second marriage, I was divorced. Maybe he had a problem with it. and just said to him, well, what did you do when Marilyn decided to go back to school to get her degree full-time? He said, well, I didn't have much choice. I just paid the babysitter while she went to school. And I never asked him. I just decided I'm going to back and get my degree. And he wasn't even here. He was working up in Berkeley, I think, that summer, and I was here with the kids, and I just enrolled myself in school and took the tests and everything else. And so by the time September came, I was enrolled in San Diego State as a full-time student.
So like, honey, guess what?
Yeah, here I am. And I've never found it necessary to ask my husband if it's okay if I do this.
Mm-hmm.
I inform,
mm-hmm.
but I don't need to ask permission to do it.
I got that. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure I had it. I didn't want to assume what he
said.
You talked a little bit about feminists coming to speak to your group.
Yeah.
What was that like? What was the
Indian women, no matter who comes to talk, they're all very polite.
Mm-hmm.
It's just afterwards you're saying, well, we don't really need that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't fit us because we've always had to be. To do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the political feminist movement that was getting started about the same time, that didn't really touch your group?
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. Did you have an opinion about the political feminists?
I felt that a lot of times they were discussing issues which are much more to the eye and the women breaking out of traditional roles, which we all felt we didn't have to do. We all felt that,
You are a good member.
We never ever even had done it. It was just always there. It always was.
So they were doing. They were taking steps you thought you'd already taken.
Yeah, and we never even thought about it, I guess. Because we were out there trying to help our kids.
Mm-hmm. Through the education.
Yeah.
Did you You were talking about the system, the education system, being. Racist, which I agree with.
Yeah.
But can you talk a little bit more about the racism and how it affected, maybe personally affected your children?
I don't think it affected my children in any respect because I've always been one to go to school. If questions came up, I always would address them. If questions came up with my kids, we always talked about them.
Mm-hmm.
I always remember one time with my youngest one. He'd come home from school and he was kind of glum. He said, what's the matter? Nothing. Nothing's wrong. Something's wrong. No, nothing's wrong. Yes, there is. Kids at school call me a beaner. Now, I said, look at that child. And he goes, yeah, what's a beaner? What are you talking about? You know, I'm Mexican. Well, I didn't know they called Mexican beaners, but did you tell them that you weren't a Mexican? Yeah, I told him I was a Mexican. I wasn't a Mexican, that I'm an Indian. He said, well, and the kid said, well, you can't be Indian. We killed all the Indians off in the Indian War. So I said, well, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? I said, did you tell him when you go here to the local reservations and you go back to the reservation where I come from, that there are all lots of Indians around there? And he said, yeah, but they don't know. And I said, no, that's true. And then we began to talk about why they don't know. But I always address those questions with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't help what people don't know. It's not our fault.
Do you find that you don't mind being in the education role? Always?
No.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you do you ever resent that? Like,
Here we go again.
Oh, yeah, some days I do. I always do. I did say one day, I really get tired of teaching non-Indians. All this, I start all over again, you know. For instance, locally, I look at all the work we did in the late 60s, early, mm-hmm. all through the 70s. The schools haven't changed. I was out to Barona Reservation the other day, and I want to go back and see their school. But they put most of the Indian kids around here in home study. That has not changed in the school system. And so now what they're doing, they have classes for all these kids on the reservations who are on home study.
So they're running school on the reservations regardless.
Yeah. And, you know, and so what we did back 20 years ago, 25 years ago, is still going on. They still put our kids in special ed. I was working with a little boy when I was with Indian Child, and he was placed with his grandmother. And I did home-based therapy, and so I'm looking at house. And they thought this little boy needed therapy. Somebody made this decision, this little boy needed therapy. I checked with him. He was very grounded in reality. He was with his grandmother. He knew why he was with his grandmother. He knew what the problems with his mother were. This kid about 9. Very bright. No, this kid doesn't seem to need therapy. So I'll see him at school. So I saw him at school. Talked to him. I still convinced him. Went back to the home again, talked to Grandma. I was there when we came home from school. I went to talk with Grandma first. And then I saw him again. And finally, I called the worker and I said, you know, yeah, I've seen this kid 3 times. Who decided he needed therapy? The attorney. The attorney who saw him once in a court setting? I said, if he didn't talk, I could understand that. This is a 9-year-old kid. And if he didn't want to talk to her in the court room, I could understand that. So, anyway, he was in special ed. I couldn't figure that one out. So we had an intern in the school, and I called the school. They called her, an Indian intern from our school psychology program. This was just a few years ago, 4 years ago. And I said, could you pull this cube file and look at it and let me know what's going on? Because I can't figure this out. I said, he's bright, he's grounded in reality, he knows what's going on, he's articulate, I don't know. Pulled his cue file, he was a special ed, and she said he shouldn't have been. His IQ showed that he was above average. And, but that's what goes on. And nobody is there to question. So, you know, we keep fighting these battles over and over again. So I think that probably the best solution is what the parents out here in the reservations are doing, is teaching the kids there. I worked at Sequan, and they have a little home study thing there that goes on at Sequan. And they have a lot of kids that can't be there that have been kicked out of school for whatever reason. And these are not bad kids. No, I don't understand it. They're learning. They're, you know.
That's our training.
Yeah. So I don't really know. You know, but that, you know, I said we started that in the school system, and yeah, you sometimes do get tired of the same thing over and over again, but, you know, the same system. And I know Dr. Carol Robinson's in there, too, who runs our psychology program here at State. Said she had talked to one of the principals, one of the schools where I used to go see kids regularly. I had a group of kids out at that school. And so she mentioned to the principal that I would be coming in again this that year before I went to work at Sequan. And he said, oh yes, that I was very knowledgeable, I was very articulate, but I sided with the kids. I said, well, I hope so. I mean, I hope I'm an advocate for these children in the system. I think that was my role.
Yeah. Last time I checked, that was my job.
And why he would think, See, and I think that's the perception. If you're educated, if you know the system, you should be on a system side and not an adversary to it. And that kind of blew my mind, too.
Yeah.
And this was just, again, 3 years ago.
Yeah, I find that my sense is still on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I'm on the kid's side. I hope I'm on the kid's side. That's a, if you think I'm on the school side, then I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Let's go back a little bit to the early 70s when you had this group started.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you moved, you were in school full-time. You, you re-enrolled in your TA for your master's.
Yeah, I was actually in the PhD program, but I didn't complete the doctoral dissertation. I advanced to candidacy. I passed my orals, had my research proposal accepted, and all the other good stuff. Then in 72, I went to teach at San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
The Indian Studies program was just new at San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
So it became very time-consuming.
Mm-hmm.
I was half-time sociology and half-time American English.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got my dissertation finished. I taught, I worked with Indian students, and it was a very activist group. We had a lot of Indian students at that time who needed a lot of help. I did tutoring, advocacy, and all kinds of things that needed to be done.
What types of... what types of, I don't want to say barriers, but what types of encounters did you have working, I mean, when you were doing all this work with kids, what types of things did you come up against?
Oh, well, number one, a lot of them came in from reservations. They had no conception of what education was all about. So you're teaching them what it is. You're teaching them how the school functions. I remember one guy, Navajo kid, he signed up for a lot of classes and didn't like them, so he signed up for another whole batch more. Didn't drop the other ones. So he had all these classes, like about 8 or something like this. And he brought it to me, and they wouldn't talk to him over in the office about it. He kept going to the office, to the university office. So I looked at him and I said, give him to me. I said, come on, let's go. I walked over to the office, the registrar's office, yes it was. You know, they have a faculty line, so I get in the faculty line, I could bring this stuff up, and I said, hey, look, I mean, this student has done this, and he's come back several times to know how to try and figure out, and nobody will talk to him. Well, he should have dropped him, but this is the deadline date. I understand. He doesn't understand. Now, what is the major problem if we get them dropped now?
Mm-hmm.
They dropped them. And he went on with his life. But all that hassle that these young people went through in order to understand the system of which they had no knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really... it's a major problem, the whole system. Even my granddaughter, who's a freshman, you know, she said, Grandma, I was scared when I went to Cal, because I don't know what to expect. You know, she graduated Berkeley High, you know. So, I mean, it's a system that's difficult at best for people who have been in the world, but for those who didn't understand it, it's devastating. Teachers who they felt made fun of them. Teachers who made comments.
Mm-hmm.
So we would just intervene and, you know, I'd go and talk to the professors. And at the same time, we were fighting the system to get our classes accepted. So I was on those, so I was on those committees to get the classes accepted.
What were some of the rationalizations for not accepting classes?
Oh, well, I mean, this is not an academic subject. Well, no, that's true, but history is an academic subject. And the history of Romania is an academic subject. Now, the history of American Indians and American society should be an academic subject.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a long, complicated history. And so it was just that constant battle.
Did you find that you had a lot of battles to fight, not even with just administration, but with other professors?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Did they not take the program seriously?
No, they did not take the program seriously. They did not think we were academics. They did not. And then there's turf wars. Anthropologists felt we were treading on their toes. We were teaching Indians. They owned the Indians, so you don't teach about Indians in another area. The anthropologists teach about Indians. And history, and, you know, the historians. Mm-hmm. And then you get a class in American Indian literature. Well, you know, I mean, everybody has their own turf.
Right.
And so, yeah, you had battles with other professors, you had battles with administration.
Did your being a woman ever come into play? I know it didn't for you, but for anybody else in
the world. I will imagine with some of the men professors it most certainly did, yes. Yeah, I'm sure they had problems with it.
I don't know if you can kind of think about maybe number. I know you can't give specific numbers because you don't have it in front of you, but what are some of the averages for the women that come into the colleges, American Indian women,
mm-hmm.
versus the men? Are they even, or more women?
More women than men, yeah. Mm-hmm. For instance, the current program at San Diego State, I'll just take that. We haven't really had very many men in it. This is the first year that I've been there now, but I think this is the second male we've had. We will be having another male in the incoming class for next fall. But by and large, the program has been largely women. Yeah.
Do you find that the women come to you, what are the primary reasons you think the women come into the program? What are they looking for?
A career, and a career that they can take back to the reservation if they decide to return, which is why I think we have the School of Social Work in this program. If they decide they want to be school counselors, one woman we had, a Hopi woman who lived in San Diego, oh my goodness, she was here 25 years, she got her school counseling certification for pupil personnel. Now she's back working on her reservation in Hopi as a school counselor. She didn't do well in the school system here because, again, she's battling the system. And I think that's the hard part, is having to battle the system.
So a lot of the people that are coming in that you're working with and that you're talking about, today, they're coming from high school settings. Are these high schools primarily off the reservations?
They're, some have high schools on the reservation, for instance, like the Hopi has their high school, and most of the Navajo kids come out of large boarding schools. But when they go away to college, they go away to all the, you know, regular colleges. So what we're talking about is San Diego State, the group that
right.
I'm involved with is graduate.
Right.
So they have their undergraduate degrees from various colleges.
What do you think some of the issues for these women coming into the program are in terms of, do you find that the issues they face are very different than they were, say, 20 years ago?
Or? No, I think they're the same old issues. And, well, some of the things that you study, you know, say you want to do a research project in the Indian community, and your doctoral dissertation, that's what the problem I had, their advisors, well, you know, nobody knows anything about that. There's no literature, so how are you going to do this? This is not a topic. Well, you know, it's the same kind of thing still going on today,
mm-hmm.
Which is why we have a special Indian project. Being in a classroom setting with a professor who has only mainstream values, and when you begin to bring up, well, in our community, blah, 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 they look at you as if you got two heads.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time, after I got my degree in anthropology, I decided, well, gosh, you know, I got this degree, and there's nothing I can do with it. It was interesting getting it. So maybe I'll go back, and I was an elementary school teacher before, so I'll go back in my credential. That was after the Rhinebeck. So I go back and I take two classes and I think I'm going to lose my mind. Number one, there wasn't a whole lot of academic stuff. One class I took in child development, we took a chapter a week and we read the chapter and we discussed the chapter Monday and Wednesday, and every Friday we had a quiz on those two things. I mean, come on, this was a graduate class? And then the next one was on the ideological and phenomenal foundation something of education. And I would raise the question of values. Well, now there are different cultures with different values, and you're saying that this is what, you know, so-and-so says. That might be fine for one group, but, I mean, there's a lot of other people in this society. Well, I raised my hand, okay, the professor just about to jump off.